Hello, and welcome to the podcast Shaping the Future with Think Tanks. My name is Marin, and I'm very happy to welcome you for this first episode. This podcast series is proposed by the Think Tank Hub. Based in the lively international Geneva, the Hub facilitates the involvement and contributions of think tanks to policy discussions around multilateralism and foreign policy. This way, the Think Tank Hub gives access to international think tanks to global discussions. Oh, but wait, what is a think tank again? Well, in short, think tanks provide research papers and policy recommendations on various social, political, and economic issues. By thinking out of the box, they can offer valuable inputs for policymakers. In this podcast, we will present to you the work of various think tanks on different topics relevant to the international Geneva ecosystem. Our idea? Bring the immense knowledge and research achieved by think tanks from all over the globe to the heart of international Geneva. Ready? Let's hear our first guest. What nationality are you? Where do you come from? Simple questions that usually call for a simple answer. But imagine for 1 second. What if you were not a recognized citizen of any country around the world? If you were denied access to citizenship? What if you were stateless? Today we will discuss the issue of statelessness with our guest Eva Wuchold, Program Director of the Social Rights Program at the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung in Geneva. Eva, welcome.
Thanks a lot, Marine. I'm very happy to be here.
The Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung is a German think tank and non-profit institution working on democratic and social rights. They have an office here in Geneva to raise awareness on those issues within the international Geneva ecosystem. Eva has coordinated the publication of an Atlas of the Stateless, released in October last year, in collaboration with UNHCR. Let's jump right into this discussion. So Eva, before we start, we might want to clarify for our listeners, what does stateless mean? When are you considered stateless and how does this happen?
Well, the official definition of a stateless person is a person who is not considered as a citizen or national under the operations of the law of any country, any state. So stateless means basically that you are not considered as being part of the state, not a recognized citizen, and you also don't have the rights of the citizens that live in that state and that you also live in. And there are many reasons for statelessness. There are stateless people that are stateless from birth because of problems with regard to birth registration. There are people that inherited statelessness from their parents, but there are also other reasons like refugee situations or also political motivation of states that can cause statelessness.
So as I was saying before, the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung published an Atlas of the Stateless. Tell us a bit more about the story behind this atlas. What led your organization to tackle this topic and to create an atlas around it?
Well, the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung for a long time has been working on the issue of global social rights, that society and the international community are far from ensuring the rights to rights has been one discourse that we've been concentrating on. And that it should be a guiding principle in everyday political activities that every person has the right to rights. Stateless people are deprived of most basic social and human and political rights because there is no state that protects them. And it was almost imperative that we create more awareness on this issue of statelessness. Because stateless people are a particularly vulnerable group of people. And the Atlas was a very suitable format for this, for creating this awareness, because it presents the topic of statelessness in many facets. There are country examples, but also general examples. It also talks about possible solutions in a very easy and understandable language. So the intention was to reach out to people that are also maybe not necessarily in the academic sphere and through the graphics also to create very easy understandable materials And yeah, and I think it was the right format to take up, to inform about these groups of people.
Yes, for our listeners who haven't seen or read this atlas yet, we will put the link in the description of this episode. But yes, it's very interesting how you managed to structure your atlas with different chapters and different case studies with graphics. It's very interactive and interesting to read. So what are the main findings of your publication?
I think there are two things that became clear in the various articles of the atlas. One is that people become stateless for a variety of reasons. I've already mentioned a couple. Can be deprivation of citizenship, flight or displacement, religious discrimination, also gender discrimination, the consequences of nomadic lifestyle. That's also a very interesting article in the Atlas. But also that the effects, how people are affected, are very different from region to region. Statelessness is not a regional problem. It is a global problem, and it happens in almost every country in the world. So these are the most interesting findings, I think.
So while reading your atlas, I was really impressed to discover that there are an estimated 10 million stateless people in the world. That's huge. I mean, 10 million, this is the entire population of Sweden or Portugal, if you think about it. But only 4.2 million have been reported to the UNHCR. And many countries don't automatically report the number of stateless people on their territory. So you mentioned in your atlas that there is very little data on statelessness. How come?
Yeah, there's also no easy answer to this question. I think states are not obliged to share data on stateless persons in their country. And even if they've signed the statelessness conventions, and they should be obliged to forward this data, to collect and forward this data. There's very little possibility of sanctions. So if they don't do so, there is no information on stateless people gathered. Moreover, stateless people don't have a big lobby that is putting their case forward in international political discussions. Before the UNHCR launched its campaign to end statelessness in 2014, there were very few organizations advocating for stateless people, even at the international level. And one result of this was certainly that there was little information and data on these people.
So is this a lack of political will, or is it also a lack of capacity to collect the data?
I think, both is true. So that are countries that simply don't see statelessness as a problem and therefore don't develop methods to systematically register stateless people. This includes, for example, Germany, the country where I come from. And then there are certainly countries where there are general problems with the registration of births, or there is no census that has been taken for decades. So there is little information. And by the way, problems with birth registration can also lead to statelessness. But there are also countries that, for political reasons, refuse to report data to the UNHCR or simply don't raise the issue at all. Even countries also within Europe, like in the Baltic states, that invent a different term for stateless persons, not to talk about statelessness within their territory.
And why don't they want to talk about statelessness? It's easier to close their eyes and just ignore the problem, or?
Well, for this case, it has to do with minority rights that are being refused. And I think it has very often it had to do also, there are cases in the Middle East where it had to do with neglecting minority rights, but also religious motivations.
Okay, and so how could we improve this data collection and ensure that states acknowledge the existence of stateless people? Did you come up with any solutions in your atlas?
Well, in general, I think it would probably already help if more states would send their data on stateless people to the UNHCR, because the UNHCR is the institution that collects these data on the global level. Although the quality of this data is, of course, also crucial, and you never know if it is of good or bad quality, the data that is sent to the UNHCR. What is difficult is that the problems regarding the collection of data vary from country to country. There is no one-fits-all solution. Therefore, the concrete problems with regard to data collection have to be identified country by country. For example, as I said before, regarding birth registration, or because the issue does not come up in population surveys, only then solutions can be found. And of course, the prerequisite is always that the states do not want to address the issue, and not hide the issue for political reasons. And I think this can only be overcome with pressure from the population. So the topic has to become a topic in a certain region, and only through pressuring the government on side of the population, the government probably then will take up the issue as a political problem and start collecting data and start recognizing the problem and trying to find solutions. But there has been a lot of progress made. And also one thing that shows this is also that there were many more countries signing the conventions just recently. So I think the UNHCR campaign has made a good effort and good results.
Okay, that's a very good sign then. And if we talk now about the consequences of being stateless, of course, when you're stateless, you don't have a nationality. You're also inexistent in databases. It, of course, has implications in terms of recognition, integration in society. You don't even exist on paper. So could you tell us a bit more about this?
I mean, as I said before, stateless persons are very often denied basic rights. I mean, this depends on the country they live in, but there are rights that are being denied in all the countries. Very often this includes access to education, access to health, which was very relevant during the COVID pandemic, of course, but also in general. Very little opportunities in general, because there's also limited access to formal jobs. They often cannot marry legally. In some countries, they cannot legally bury their dead people. So they are not allowed to move freely. They are not allowed to vote, to run for office, or to open bank accounts. So there's very little access to any kind of legal documents. So they're really deprived of the most basic rights, I think.
So now if we're talking about the role of international institutions. You're working from Geneva, even if your organization is based in Germany, specifically to connect with international organizations based in Geneva. So on this topic of statelessness, what is the role of the international community? What has been done so far? You mentioned, of course, the UNHCR, but I guess more has been done.
Yes. The starting point were the two UN conventions on statelessness, the 1954 convention that aimed to ensure that stateless persons enjoy a minimum level of human rights, and the 1961 convention that aims to prevent statelessness and reduce it over time. So this is the backbone to all the activities on statelessness. And then, as I said, there is the UNHCR campaign that started in 2014 and will run until 2024. But apart from that, there are other UN agencies here in Geneva. There are also other UN agencies based in other countries, like, for example, UNICEF, that has been concentrating a lot on stateless children. But there is the High Commissioner for Human Rights that has his seat here and that supports monitoring of human rights of stateless people. And in addition, the Human Rights Council, where also lots of nonprofit organizations turn to, and they try to bring and raise the concerns with regard to stateless persons in ongoing processes on various human rights processes.
So would you say the topic is high enough on the agenda of those international organizations?
Of course not. If it was high enough on the agenda, I think we wouldn't have been doing this atlas, which was like a first time publication that had like such this global perspective on the issue. There are organizations that have been working on the topic for quite some time. Before the UNHCR started its campaign, I think there was little activities with regard to stateless persons. But since then, the increase of organizations and also of campaigns and processes has been quite remarkable. When we launched the Atlas of the Stateless in Germany, I got called by various journalists who had for the first time heard about the issue of statelessness, although they've been working on political topics all their life. So that showed to me that it's just really not on the agenda of the media, but also very, very low on the agenda in the political discussions in general. We thought that we can sort of make a difference by raising the topic and by trying to create more awareness. But I hope that in the next couple of years, it's still 3 years until the UNHCR campaign comes to an end, there will be loads more activities that will be done with regard to this topic.
And of course, the topic of statelessness is quite transversal because it regards also climate change or also gender, or even there is a link between poverty and statelessness. So I guess it should interest those other international organizations. What role could they play in the future?
I think there are several discussions. You just mentioned climate change. We have an article in the Atlas that refers to this topic, to the stateless of the future, because there are no rules or regulations in place yet of how to handle situations in which a country is not livable anymore or an island is maybe even completely drowning in water. What to do with the people of that country that would then officially maybe not even be stateless, but would not have any territory where they could live anymore. So these kind of discussions have to start now, because otherwise, I mean, who knows how quickly this would happen? Can also regard countries in which that dry out, let's say. So it can also be the opposite. These situations can come quicker as we might now think, and what to do with those people that will then definitely have to migrate somewhere. No, I think the status case is a good case to sort of think about what rights are needed for people in any situation. So, and then maybe also refugees could profit from this discourse. And we really have to think about whether the access to basic social, human, political rights has to be connected with nationality or not.
And you mentioned before that international agreements do exist. We have two conventions from 1954 and 1961. But what you just said about the effect of climate change, the impact that people will lose their home country because of the sea levels rising or because they dry out. So those issues are quite, I wouldn't say new, but newer maybe than when the conventions were created. Do we need to update those conventions? Are there negotiations for new international agreements, for example?
No, this I don't know about, at least. I think the conventions are pretty okay. They tackle the major issues. The problem is that not all countries have signed the conventions, and then again that not all countries follow the conventions. But these are very technical processes also, because of course nationality rights are on the state level, so every single state has to look at its legislation, for example, with regard to birth registration, whether there are in many countries many discriminatory elements in it. I think still 25 countries don't allow women to give their citizenship to their children. So there are all kinds of problems that still have to be solved. And I think, I think these two conventions serve well as a framework for that. It's implementing what is written in there. And that's really, I think, a country-by-country process.
Okay, and so now if we think about the future, how do you see the situation evolving? Are there certain... You mentioned already a few steps to be taken by states to do legal reform, to improve birth registrations, for example. What would be your recommendations for the future and the evolution of the situation?
Well, I'm... a utopian, I think. So I think that we just have to face that there are many reasons why people are leaving their countries, and there are many reasons why people arrived in a country at a certain time and didn't get registered. And we should really just make it very easy to register people that are in a country for a certain time, because for the moment we are still having social security systems and all of that are very much based on residence and nationality. So I think there should be many initiatives to make it easier to adopt a nationality and then from there, I think we in general have to sort of also work. I mean, while we're seeing more and more people migrating around the world, we also see more and more racism coming up also because of the rise of authoritarian governments around the world. So, and this is of course connected. So I think we also very much have to work on that end, like... So I think anti-racism work is also one way of supporting stateless people in the end, although people don't really make that connection immediately. And I think it's about global social rights, I think.
Make a difference. That's very important. Eva, thank you so much for your participation in this podcast. I was really glad to have you as a guest. To read further about this, you'll find the link to the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung's Atlas in the description of this episode, as well as other relevant sources. Don't forget to share this episode on social media if you enjoyed it. If you're interested in the work of think tanks dealing with foreign policy and multilateralism, you can visit our website, thinktankhubgeneva.org, where you will find all the latest publications of different think tanks connected to the international Geneva ecosystem and our upcoming events. Thank you for listening.